This is with Giancarlo Nava and Ryan Goins.
Welcome to the Heat Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Nava. And with me today, we have Heat Twitter President Alf. How are you, sir?
What up?
We have Heat Beat Insider, Mr. Lefty Leif.
What's up?
And we have our guest for today, Mr. George Sedano, who I think we're beefing with, although I'm not sure. Welcome to the program, sir. Thank you for coming on. George, are you there?
We lost George already?
We lost George already.
Yo, sorry. I don't know what happened there.
I thought he took the beef seriously and hung up on
it. I thought he hung up
what,
already.
Wait, what a great troll move that would be. After all the crap that Harry's talked about him.
Oh, my God. That'd be awesome.
If he would just hung up. He was like, yeah, I'll come on the show. 2 seconds in. Click.
I should have not called back, right? That would have been funny.
That would have been amazing. So, George, are we beefing?
Are we recording now? This is great.
No, yeah, we're recording.
Okay, good.
Are we beefing? I want to know. What's going on? Are you beefing with Heat Beat? Please say yes.
Oh, man. Sure. Absolutely. You and your pesky ass kids.
Bring this up, dude. I mean, come on. We have to beef up.
Why? Who have you beefed with previously?
I mean, Adam Smoot. Beefing with Adam.
I'm not in that. No, then I ain't beefing with you.
But that's like, yeah, that's not a show. Like,
we're trying to go higher. We're trying to go higher on the showbiz ladder. So
Adam Smoot's a crappy beef.
Yeah. Adam Smoot's a crappy beef.
Dutch beak. I think.
I like Adam Smoot, man.
I like Adam too. Adam's just mean sometimes. No, but you're right.
He's mean as hell.
He's mean. He's just mean. I got to protect my guys, though, because we...
Guys got a little sensitive, though, on that last one. I saw that on Twitter. You guys got a little sensitive. Did you talk about it on your podcast?
Yeah, we did. I felt bad about it, because we're not... Well, we like to make fun of ourselves, and I don't think we take ourselves that seriously, but I don't know. That hit a nerve. I felt bad.
It's just me.
I know,
everything so seriously.
Lace my baby bird.
Leafy leaf. That's what happens. You got a little yellow sensitive. He's a writer, and he gave you some constructive criticism in kind of a mean tone, but that's just who he is. And you guys got a little personal there. You got a little defensive. I thought you guys can't beef if you're going to get defensive. Like, that's not how it works.
I hated us for that.
It was awful writing. I mean, it was just it was random.
You know what?
I'm
going to be honest. I didn't read it, so I don't know, but I trust him.
It's a good move.
I trust him. Like, he's a good writer. Like, you can not like him on Twitter or whatever, and he doesn't write very often anymore. But when he does write, it's good.
No, so. I've read it. It's good. The piece he wrote about being a father was really good.
We sat there and defended Leif, and he didn't even like his own damn article? That's some BS.
Leif, I did that for you. You're the baby bird. No. I wanted to protect you.
You're misconstruing what I'm saying. The content and the spirit behind the article – I stand behind, but I'm not necessarily looking at that as winning some award for
a Pulitzer,
you know, literature or something like that.
So we're sensitive now, apparently, and Adam hates us.
That's funny. I love that you guys are beefing with Adam Smoot, though. I think that's funny.
We've been beefing. Like, Adam has, like, taken shots at us forever, but, like, even when we were nobody, he'd make fun of our bad graphics when we were bad at it. He made fun of our website when it was...
He's definitely... Well, you know, he's a website designer, so, like, he's definitely, like, a website snob.
No, he was totally right. He was totally right. Every time he'd, like, talk crap about anything we did, and I was like, oh, God, we really deserve it. It was bad in the beginning.
Dude, we should bring on Adam Smoot as a consultant. It seems like every time he says something, he's right. But instead, we just make fun of him, so...
I'll pay him in t-shirts.
I don't agree with anything that he says whatsoever. And no, I can't stand his Twitter account, but there's a lot of people that can't stand my Twitter account.
Leif, it was so bad, no. Because I'm out here trying to defend you, and he goes, no, bleep that guy, and he starts screenshotting, like...
Well,
because
I said I'd rather follow someone into a fire than follow him on Twitter.
Come on, man.
I get it.
You know how hard that got for me?
Yeah, I wasn't going to comment. Anyway, let's move on to more important
things. I'm going to just come on and say it. I don't think the Heat are going to make the playoffs. I don't have any guts.
Ooh.
I think the schedule is really tough. They play Cleveland once. They play Boston on the road. They play Toronto twice. They play Washington twice. Milwaukee, I thought they had that West Coast road trip that they performed a lot better than anybody really expected. So I just think the way scheduling is going to work out, I think Miami might be the one out.
Well, and Milwaukee's playing much better right now. Since they've got Middleton back in the lineup, they look like a completely different team, basically. It's really what they needed. They needed a floor spacer on that team, and he provides that. Listen, I think it's coming down to the wire. Like, I don't think it's a given that they make the playoffs by any stretch of the imagination, because they dug themselves too deep a hole. I think that would be some crappy way to go out, though. If you're going to miss the playoffs and you're going to end up with, like, the 15th pick in the draft, like, that's going to suck.
It's going to be – that's the worst case. That's the worst case scenario, because you don't – tank season's not happy because they don't get their good pick. And the other side of Twitter's not happy, or Heat fandom's not happy, because you missed out on the playoffs and you're number 9. That's gonna hurt.
But somebody's gonna go and say, "Oh, they got Kawhi at the 15th pick."
I hate that.
I think there's things that can be taken away from the season, even if they don't make the playoffs. Like, I think a lot of good things happened this year, and I think you learned a lot about a lot of the guys on this team, like who's worth bringing back, who is probably expendable. I think a lot of people are looking at Josh Richardson right now and are saying, is he expendable? Like, was last year just a fluke? Because it kind of feels like it, but he's also injured. But, I mean, like, I think even if they don't make the playoffs, what Spo was able to accomplish this year, I think, carries a lot of weight. I think a lot of players around the league probably saw what he was able to do for guys like James Johnson, Wayne Ellington, Deion Waiters. And I really think it increased his cachet around the league.
Listen, I don't think there's any question, but that's not like a new thing that role players come to Miami and kind of find new life.
It was highlighted pretty ridiculously this year. Like,
no question. Yeah, no doubt. And look, I've been yelling and screaming since before when LeBron was there, that Eric is a top 5 or 6 coach in the league. And people dismiss that a lot because of LeBron. But I think that, you know, you talk to people around the league, okay? Like, I'm talking about GMs, assistant GMs, people like that. And the people who make decisions in that sport, and they all think Eric is a great coach. And this just highlights that. Like, I look at Eric right now, he may be the coach of the year, you know, whether it's him or D'Antoni. You know, I think those would kind of be your top two guys. You know, there might be a couple of other guys you can put in that conversation. But I think those are where you start. And when you look at the league, like just kind of where he's at, where he ranks in the hierarchy, like Pop is clearly the number one guy. And then after that, you can kind of make the case for Eric for number two if you want to. Now, I wouldn't put him there yet. I still think Rick Carlisle is the second best.
Did we lose George?
I'll talk about Brad Stevens. And I think Brad is very good too. Look, man, you don't get Butler to where he got him to. Unless you're a good coach, okay? I don't care what anybody says, because, you know, outside of Gordon Hayward, there's not a ton of talent rolling through there. But he's clearly done a good job. He's definitely done a good job with Boston, but I don't think he's as good as Eric. So I think Eric is in that top 5 conversation for sure.
I think he's definitely top 3. I mean, where you want to put him and Carlisle is up to you. But I think if you talk about coaches in the league, he's top 3. And I think he solidified that this year. And and that's what I'm saying. When you walk away from this year, and whether they make the playoffs or not, and I think we all kind of down. I don't know if we're completely down on them making the playoffs, but the loss of Deion at this crucial juncture, that pains me to say that the loss of Deion Waiters is crippling to my basketball team. But the
I'll
way
tell you this, though. I'll tell you this, to interrupt you real quick. And I'm not trying to say that you should celebrate a guy's injury, because I think Deion's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. That's my guess. Okay. You know, I think he may try to come back sooner, but I think he's out basically 2 to 4 weeks. They're never going to say that. But that's my guess.
Well, he said it. He pretty much said it.
Yeah, but they're not saying that. Like, he kind of intimated that it'll be a little bit. It's worse than it was the original time. It's also the same one. If he misses a month, that here's the silver lining to that. You may be able to get him back cheap.
I don't know about that, George.
He has a point. Yeah.
It does a number of things, though. I mean, not only does it make it possible that you could get them at a reduced cost, but also it leaves open so many question marks going into the summer that I think we were hoping to get those answers by watching him play in the playoffs, see how, you know, how he responds when he's being game planned for in a series. But all of a sudden, if you don't get that opportunity to see that, it's tough to commit to him, especially if you have to pay him long term. So it raises as many question marks as it does provide any advantage, I would say.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I don't think – listen, man, like, this notion – and I think I saw Barry Jackson write this, that he could command somewhere $14 million or whatever.
Let him do that somewhere else.
First of all, right, 100%. But number two, I don't buy that. Like, I don't buy that somebody is, in essence, going to give him a – 4-year deal worth $55 million. Like, I don't see that.
I mean, Tyler got 50.
But I get it. But he doesn't bring the baggage of Dion Waiters. Okay, like Dion Waiters was a punchline up until just recently. And by the way, you could still make the case he's still a punchline. A lot of people.
Well, he is. He's still a punchline.
Very true.
But, I mean, Derrick Rose just got money. I mean, Derrick Rose got money. Like, Joakim Noah got money.
Right.
Luol Deng got money. Timofey Mozgov got money. Like,
the one thing, though.
We're 1 year removed, though. We're 1 year removed from people throwing around a lot of money. I think, and Leafy Leaf can get into this in a second.
Are you doing the Leafy Leaf thing on purpose?
Yes, of course he is.
Yeah, of course. Right. That's what Ethan called him.
I just wanted to make sure, because I did that on the radio station with Ethan by accident. So
yeah, Leafy Leaf. I will say this: we're looking at there's going to be less. There's going to be more of a market correction. Okay, so I think there's going to be less people throwing around crazy money this year. And I think the following season there'll be less. And I eventually will say that in the next, I don't know. We're about one more off season away from the market basically correcting itself. So I don't know how much money there is that's going to be out there for him, even this off season. Certainly not beyond that. So if he's going to get a contract, it's going to have to be now.
I don't disagree with you.
I 100% agree. I think that you're going to see teams start to regret the way that they spent when they had the extra money and the cap ceiling went up the way that it did. And Riley has kind of alluded to that, or Andy, one of them, alluded to kind of waiting to look what happens in 2018 and that these teams spending, that they're trying to basically establish what the value of these guys are and what they're getting on the market. And that's going to eventually correct itself, you know, 2018, 2019. So the one kind of weird X factor with all of it is that the Heat has a little bit of incentive to spend this summer, based on the fact that Bosch gets, you know, comes off the books. And I know that it doesn't appear like he's going to play. If I had to bet my life savings, I would say he'd retire. But you do have that kind of looming that if he plays 25 games, you know, that's right back on the books.
Yeah, if I were venturing to bet on it too, I would bet that he doesn't play. Because even his last comments were kind of in that tone, right? Like, maybe I won't play anymore. Whereas before it was adamant about, I'm coming back, I'm coming back, I'm coming back. And his most recent comments a few months ago were not that. And look, I think he's probably enjoying having a good time on Tuesday nights on TNT. It's very easy to get intoxicated by this business. You know what I mean?
A year and a half of not banging and putting your body through all that stress, you know, to come back at this point, like, it's probably not ideal. You're probably thinking like, wait, why would I want to do that again? Like,
if I'm that's not paid. A factor, then I think patience is kind of the way to go with the Heat. You know, I was like fumbling around on my timeline about what it would take to acquire a star or move up in the draft. But, you know, you kind of just keep mining these gems and building assets and pounce when you can. I don't really know that if you're not worried about Bosch coming back and that cap hit, you know, coming back on your books, then it makes sense to wait. I mean, what do you guys think?
I agree with you, Lee.
I would wait it out.
I think
that you see what you can get. I mean, you make pitches at the guys who are worth it, the Gordon Haywards, Blake Griffin, and of you, most likely those guys are going to stay put or whatever happens. Even though I still think Blake, I think Blake is going to be
out there to be had. On that.
No, it's just because I look at the
you
Clippers,
think Blake,
man.
What?
I think Blake is going to be out there to be had. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be by the Heat, but I just look at the Clippers. I look at Doc Rivers. I look at that situation. I mean, how many years is he going to keep banging his head into that wall? Like, they're not beating the Spurs. They're not beating the Warriors. And they're probably not as good as the Rockets. So now you're fourth place in that conference, and your team just keeps getting older. And your coach is trash. And I think he's being exposed. No, come on, guys. Anyway.
No. I would say this. I don't think Doc is a bad coach. I think that Doc is a bad GM. And I think that Doc the GM has failed Doc the coach more than anything else.
I think the main problem.
I also don't think he's a – I think he's a middling coach. Like, I don't think he's the worst ever. Maybe trash was a strong word. But I enjoy using that word, so
he hasn't done himself any favors because he's a good defensive coach, but he's coaching an offensive team.
No, listen, I get that. But the biggest problem they've had is that they don't have the right amount of depth to get them through the regular season. And also has some crappy luck as far as injuries are concerned. But the biggest problem they had was the year they lost, they blew the lead to the Rockets. They had no depth. They were basically a six-man team.
Yep.
And you can't get through this. You can't get through it that way. Like, they need one more dude on that team. And that's Doc. And by the way, they're locked in. Like, if Blake resigns and Chris Paul resigns, they're locked into this thing, too. I also do think Blake can be had. But honestly, I think Blake really loves Los Angeles. And I'm actually going to the Clippers-Knicks game in a little bit after this. And I've talked to people that think that if Blake were to even consider leaving the Clippers, it wouldn't be to go anywhere but the Lakers, only because it could be his team. It's a young, up-and-coming team, and he gets to stay in L.A.
I think,
but he has not been in a room with Spo and Bill Ferrand's iPads yet, which would sway his decision. So until
he sees the before and after
picks.
They're going to bring James Johnson into the meeting.
Drop the rings.
They're going to bring James Johnson and Deion Waiters.
I was going to say Rodney Magruder, but Deion's better.
No, Rodney Magruder and Okoro White are going to be in there.
Okoro picks him up at the airport, drives him in his like Prius.
His Hyundai Elantra.
Yeah. Look, I think he'll get all the meetings that he wants. But honestly, like, I actually think if there's one guy that he should re-sign, it's James Johnson. If he comes back at a reasonable price. Like, if you can get James Johnson at four for 40, you know, I'd do that, that deal in a heartbeat.
George, I think he's the one guy that it's okay to overpay for him.
Yeah, I agree. Because of everything
he No. It's not overpaying. You know, you don't overpay for James Johnson.
Like, no, but what's
James
overpaying?
Johnson's a good player.
What I mean,
like, I wouldn't go higher. I don't know, man. Like, I wouldn't go more than 12, 13 million on it.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, 12 to 14 million.
I think 12 to 14 million.
I would now, if we're talking about 16, 17, 18 million, then no, of course not. But just let the Knicks pay him because that's who's going to do it.
I mean, what's the mid level coming at? The mid level exception is going to be like 10
in the eight range.
He's going to get above the mid level. It's just a matter of how much above.
Alf, I have a question because you're complaining about James Johnson at over 15 million, but they're going to have Tyler at 20 million for 2 years.
Let him talk.
By the way, are you going to stop on Tyler? He's balling right now.
No, he's.
I know.
Okay, he's playing good. Number one, James Johnson is better than he is, and you don't want to pay James Johnson Tyler Johnson money. No, hold on, but hear me out and let me be serious for a second. They have him cheap these 2 years, which are the years that they're not contending. When they're going to presumably try to contend are the years that he's going to be expensive, and those are the years that you're going to want more cap. It'd be better if he got paid a lot this year because they're not really trying to do anything this year. It doesn't matter if their cap's tied up.
Well, they couldn't. That's not.
No,
they couldn't do it like that. I mean,
I understand how the cap works, and I understand how.
That was beyond their control in a way.
Yeah, it's situational. Like, what we're talking about is situational, Gianni. Like, the reason they did that was.
You can't be okay with paying him $20 million, and you're not okay with overpaying a little bit for James Johnson.
If who says they're going to pay him? Who says that they're going to?
Because you would think that's a super tradable contract.
Any contract is tradable, especially a young player that, you know, can. you know, be a combo guard off the bench. You may even be able to start in certain places. You don't think that that contract could be moved if the opportunity presented itself where they wanted to spend that money elsewhere? I don't think that that's like some albatross that you can't ever move.
No, no.
Pat Riley isn't married to Tyler Johnson, dude. I guarantee you that. Like, if something comes along,
Pat Riley isn't married to anybody. Yeah, Pat Riley isn't married to anybody on this team. Nobody. Zero.
George, you're kind of. Do you guys hear George kind of breaking up, or is it just my?
Yeah.
It's just on my end.
No, no, I hear it.
I hear it breaking up a little bit.
Yeah. George, how
about now?
Yeah, you're better now.
Now you sound better.
Yeah, you sound better.
Okay.
I wonder what's
Pat happening. Riley's not married to anybody on this team. Oh. Pat Riley. Am I going out again?
No, you're good.
No, you're good.
Okay. Pat Riley, dude, a month and a half ago, Pat Riley was like ready to like draft Lonzo Ball. All right. So, you know, he had scouted him for a second time at that point. So Pat Riley knows that he can't be married to any of these dudes because they're just dudes.
I think most of the, what are you laughing at?
Because they are just dudes. It's a lot of just dudes on this team, man. Like,
it's just I have those moments where I realize that I cape so hard on Twitter for a team full of dudes.
This moment of self-actualization.
Yeah, you know, self-awareness, trying to practice it, get better.
I'm such a big fan of James Johnson. I think he's a little more than just a dude because he has a skill set that's really unique. Like, I think Roddy Magruder's just a dude. I think Deion's just a dude. Like, those are guys. But, like, James Johnson has a really specific skill set that Spo likes. Like, if you look at the evolution of the Eric Spoelstra power forward, like, after the Udonis years, you know, you have LeBron and then you have Battier and you have Luol Deng. It's a continually evolving kind of 3-and-D who can handle the ball kind of guy who could shoot threes. Like, that's what Spo likes, and that's what flourishes in his system. He can do many things with that.
And that's why I think if you're going to re-sign anybody, you re-sign him. But and Heatbeat account actually tweeted this out today. It's that Prada article.
Yeah.
About about Hassan's defense and how basically the Blazers exposed the way he plays the pick and roll. And this is one of the things in kind of getting back to like last night's game and what's going on right now, and also kind of looking at the future. And I brought this up on a podcast a while ago. When you look at the way that Hassan plays the pick and roll, how he sags back, how he plays it like a traditional big man. But in this league with the 3-point shooting and all, I mean, you have so many skilled centers. You have all these point guards who can destroy you offensively. Like, is Hassan the kind of guy going forward that you want to build your team around? I mean, the Blazers just completely exposed the way he plays the pick and roll yesterday.
But I'll say one thing on that's how they've played all year, and they've had a top 10 defense. They run guys off the 3-point line and they have Hassan in the paint. And if you look at the numbers, Hassan is contesting so many shots at the rim this year. I think he's in the top 5 because they're funneling them into him, and he's doing a good job. He's in the top 10 in rim protection, and he's top 10 in like attempts defended. So that's by design, and it's worked. They run guys off the 3-point line and send him his way.
Yeah, but their execution yesterday sucked. It wasn't very good, and I know it wasn't very good because when I got off the plane, I was able to listen to the game in the car when I was stuck in LA traffic for an hour.
I bet Inglis was unhinged.
It was Crotty at the end of the game did a great job of breaking down their issues on the pick and roll yesterday and how they just got destroyed by Lillard and Nurkic. That is Hassan. Like, Hassan puts up numbers. A lot of them are empty, though. And generally, he struggles against guys who are as good or better than him. Like, it's rare that he elevates his game beyond what the guy across from him can do. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see him most nights going off against good centers. Like, Valanciunas owns him. Nurkic yesterday destroyed him.
Yeah. Brooke Lopez.
Generally killed him. That's the thing. Like, he's not that good. He puts up gaudy numbers. Wait,
you're talking about the Eastern Conference Player of the Week, by the way.
Yeah, I saw that. Correct. Okay, I get those emails, too. So, you know. I don't get him on Twitter. I get him in email form. So,
okay. Big George Sedano. Okay.
I got all the lists.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Us commoners.
Wait till Miami Heat gets credentialed. Then you can talk to
him. Way to rub it in.
I got the Bleacher Report app too, George.
You got TeamStream? Listen, man. Look, I just don't think he's that good. And here's the problem. Like, could you fool somebody into taking him? Maybe. But I just think people around the league are too smart. Like it's the same notion and conversation we were having about Deion Waiters. Like, teams around the league, they look at him and they just say, "Yeah, you're still fucked. Oops, you're still
Write that
Deion
down,
Waiters."
Brian.
Like, that's what it is. And they do the same thing with Hassan Whiteside. They say, "You're still effing Hassan Whiteside." Like, yeah, you're better. They've harnessed your ability more, but we still have questions. And GMs around the league are too smart, man. Like, there's not a lot of dummies anymore. Like, clearly there's some Vlade Divots here and there, but there's not many of those.
Yeah, see, I disagree. There are still a lot of dummies, man. I really do. Like,
somebody just gave Evan Turner a bunch of money.
Yeah, we think of the elite. I mean, there's a lot of elite. Like, I think there's more elite GMs and more smart franchises than there have ever been, but there's still the Knicks. I mean, there's still the Nets. There's still the Bulls.
Oh, see, I disagree about the Nets. Listen, I think Sean knows what he's doing, man.
Well, I'm talking about the old regime. Like, now I think they're better. Yeah. But like Gar Forman, like, I mean, they just sent Cameron Payne down to the D League. Like, there's still a lot of idiots out there. I mean, so I agree. I think the best of the best. I mean, we're seeing some of the smartest moves. We're seeing some of the most just well-run franchises we've probably ever seen. But then there's still the dregs of the league out there that just continue to make chronic moves.
This is a great segue into something I wanted to ask George about him rather being the Sixers than the Heat. What's up with that?
Long-term, still feel that way. I haven't changed my mind. Until you get... Listen, I know you can sit here and argue about Embiid. He's only played 31 games or whatever, or Ben Simmons. I will tell you what. Those two – now, look, Embiid is clearly more of a risk. But I think they shut him down twofold. They felt like he was – from what I understand, they weren't as worried structurally about his knee. But they felt like they saw enough. And let's not forget that the Sixers potentially, depending on what happens with the Lakers pick – they could have three lottery picks this year because they've got their own. They could have the Lakers pick, and they could swap with the Kings. So in a loaded draft. So I think they realized, we're playing too well. We need to kind of shut him down. Number one, because we've already seen what he can do. But you know, we don't want to take any chances. And they also, I feel like they thought, as much as they love him, I've talked to somebody there who told me they felt that maybe he's getting a little too out of control, right? Dancing at the concert, all that kind of stuff. Like, we need to get him to chill out a little bit and kind of do it this way and use the injury as a reason to kind of slow him down a little bit.
See, but doesn't that kind of all tie back to an organization structure and the people at the top and kind of the way that it's built? I mean, for lack of a better term, because you guys know I'm going to try to pull the cliche, the culture. I mean, like, back in... I'm trying to think of a good example. In 2001, when the Heat had Rod Strickland and Kendall Gill and that team, you remember that team, George? The Clippers had Michael Olowokandi, Darius Miles, Lamar Odom, Quentin Richardson. They had this young team. At that time, would you have said that you would rather be the Clippers than the Heat?
No, because the Clippers were the dregs of society. The Colangelos.
But that's what the Sixers are.
No, they're not. The Colangelos aren't that. Like, what are you talking about? Like, go look at the Colangelos' history of running organizations. It's not that. It's not Wes Unseld and the Clippers. Like, it's not even close to that. It's not even close to that. Well, his dad, last time I checked, built Phoenix. So let's not forget that part. Both of them are.
You're talking about the 90s Phoenix teams?
Well, no, the 90s teams and had an imprint on the Nash teams.
The Stoudemire teams.
Gotcha. Okay.
The good ones.
So it's not like they don't know what they're doing, those guys. So I don't agree with they're the Clippers of the 90s. Like, that's crazy talk. And here's the other part. Ben Simmons is the only legit star that was in that draft last year. Like, that you could say, if you talk to every GM in the league, they will tell you there was a significant gap between Simmons and Brandon Ingram. Now, I think Brandon Ingram could be a nice player. I just don't know if he could be a star. But I think he could potentially be Kawhi-ish, not like the game and the way he plays. I'm just saying the fact that he could be a two-way player, even though he needs a lot of work. He's very raw, is what I would say. But Ben Simmons is legitimately going to be a star in this league. You want to talk about the skill set? Hold on. You want to talk about the skill set that James Johnson has? Ben Simmons has that skill set twofold at this stage of his career, minus the shot right now. And that'll come because you can teach guys to shoot. Philadelphia has done that already with Robert Covington.
Like, but don't teams get generational talent all the time and they never happen? I mean, look at the Raptors at that same time that I'm thinking of. They're building around Vince Carter, and you're thinking when he's missing that shot in the first round against Philly, you're thinking, man, Toronto's building around Vince Carter. That team's going to be amazing. And then you look at the next decade compared to Miami's decade, and at that time they were, you know, parading around with LaFonso Ellis.
Yeah,
it turns out that the Heat had a better future. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a trend there.
No, man. No. First tax thing is ridiculous. Like, it's really hard to get guys to go there. It's not easy to get guys there. Like, I get Kyle Lowry and DeMar really enjoy playing together, but it's not traditionally that really difficult. The biggest reason you talk. But it was one of the bigger reasons Vancouver failed.
Yeah, George, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're no.
Now
you're,
we, yeah, yeah now
you're,
it's
you're
better.
Now, yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, it was one of the bigger reasons why Vancouver failed, because it was just too hard to maintain two teams in Canada, because guys didn't want to go there because of the money situation. So I don't think those things are equal. Like, I don't think that's the case. So fast forward, they've got potentially three draft picks here in a loaded draft. They've got a coach in Brett Brown who's really good, man. Like, we talked about good coach. Really, we talked about good coaches earlier. Like, he's a guy that gets zero credit. Like, yo, he's starting TJ McConnell at point guard. And, like, some combination of that and Sergio Rodriguez, and was at one stretch had won as many games as the Heat, who have better players than them. So, like, they're not that team. They're not the Clippers. They're not any of, like, those examples you're using are either extreme examples or outlier situations like Toronto. Like, you know, with Canada, like, there's not much you can do there, at least at that particular time. So I do think the Sixers' long-term viability is better because they potentially will have stars. The Heat don't have stars. Like, I had some argument with some dude on Twitter the other day trying to argue with me about Goran Dragic being a star. I'm like, stop, man. Goran Dragic, if we were doing a debate right now, like, what, like, today was the end of Goran Dragic's career, we'd be throwing him in the Hall of Very Good. Not the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Great, even. The Hall of Very Good.
He's never been an all-star.
So are you prepared to say that the Sixers will win a championship before Miami will win another one?
No, because Pat can pull a rabbit out of his ass, and of course it can happen.
Oh, but see, Leif, I don't really like that question, because we're talking about immediate future, and, like, what you're asking is not something that's easily guaranteeable. Like, what George is saying, and while I agree with him, Philadelphia, like, if you look toward the next 5-6 years, there's nobody available for Miami as of now that they can become good or any
sense of contention.
Not that Philadelphia is, but you see a path that they can. I hate being the. I'm an assets guy now.
I think we're doing. There's two different conversations.
Ugh.
In a vacuum, when you look at what the Sixers have and what they have coming to them, yes, their future looks brighter. But when you take past history into account. And I even if I'll give you the Colangelos and all the crap they've done, but if I also look at Pat Riley and the Heat and what they've done, and I say which franchise would I rather be, I would still always rather be the Heat. because of the fact that you have Pat, you have Andy Usberg, you have Spo, and you have Miami, and you have Mickey Arison. Like, you have these things that have proven time and time again, no matter how far they fall, they will come back quicker than any other franchise in the league. But but when you look at the Sixers, yes, they have this bright future. They have all these assets. But I'm looking back at all the, you know, I'm not going to sit here and Google every draft, but how many first overall picks have they had and that are gone? I mean, it just seems like a cycle. Like they draft these guys, they don't work out, they lose them. They draft these guys, they get hurt, they sit for 2 years, lose them.
But you also forget they switched the decision maker is a completely different person right now.
I understand. But it seems like these teams that draft at the top of the draft every year stay drafting at the top of the draft every year. Like, it's a cycle that just repeats itself, because by the time these guys get good enough to command a big deal, they go somewhere where there's actually winning being done. Not the same loser franchise that they've been with for the first six years.
Who scares you in the East? Like, who scares you in the East?
Nobody.
That's the point.
I mean, LeBron is the only thing that scares you. But there's so many examples of teams that get all the tools, but then they never build the house. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, they just don't put it all together, because it takes more than just talent and nailing a bunch of draft picks and acquiring assets.
Listen. Culture boy, I get it. I get what you're saying. I was there, okay? I know what Miami can do. What I'm telling you is, if you ask Pat Riley if he could have Joel Embiid or Ben Simmons, if he could flip rosters right now, what would he rather have? He'd rather have Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. In a vacuum, yeah. In a vacuum, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you. But
if you're telling Pat right now, if I put Pat on this podcast right now and said, Pat, I'd give you the Sixers roster and
can you do that?
I might be able to.
No, I don't. It took I don't use the Pat Riley. Listen, let me explain something to you. Okay, let's go off on a tangent here for a second.
I love tangents. Let's go.
In the media, especially if you have any relationship with the Heat, you have what's called, I like to call, the Pat Riley card. Right now, it's basically like in Monopoly, the get out of jail card. Right. Like, you don't use that card unless you absolutely have to. So considering I had to write a 3,000-word piece for ESPN.com about the relationship between Shaq and Pat Riley, that's the time I used that card, and I had a 30-some-odd minute conversation with him. Like, no offense to you guys, I don't even know if I like you guys all that much. The Pat card for you. I barely use it on myself. I sure as hell ain't going to use it on you guys.
Did you guys talk about the Sixers roster? Did you talk about the Sixers roster?
We didn't talk about the Sixers roster. No, we
actually. See, that's what I mean.
we spent that day we spent 35 minutes talking about Shaq.
Listen.
Well, here's the other question.
We don't really need you. I think we're going to get Anthony Chang to do it for us.
Oh, God.
Well, Anthony Chang, I'm sure Anthony Chang can pull the pack card for you.
Yeah, he likes us. He's our friend, unlike you.
I'm debating on whether I should get you Cassidy Hubbard, even though you won't hit that threshold.
What was the bet again? Was it 45?
45. George. I mean, it really was 48. I'll even give you 45, but you're not
getting No, there's tape of 45.
I got to find the tape.
There's tape of 45.
I know. But you're not getting to 45 anyway.
Dude, have you heard our podcast? You think we could doctor audio?
Well, you're not getting to 45 anyway, so there's that too.
Well, we have to go like 11-1 or something at this point.
They're 34 and
30. Yeah, Cassidy Hubbard barely is on my podcast, let alone your podcast.
It's regular season and playoff wins combined, right, George?
Nah. Anyway, go ahead, Leafy Leaf. What were you going to go before I went off on a tangent with the Pat Riley charge card? What were you going to say?
I don't even remember.
I can't remember at all.
We were talking. I said that if you gave Pat the opportunity to flip rosters and their assets and picks and all that, I said he would absolutely do it in a heartbeat.
Oh no, and I agree with you. I think that he would too, but I don't think that's an indicator of guaranteed future success that Philadelphia is going to be able to put those pieces together and do that.
You guys are having two different conversations. Yeah. Leif, you would rather have the Heat front office and their culture and their history, and I think George is talking more just as far as roster Correct. Construction. So I think you guys are having, I think the reason, that's what I'm saying. In a vacuum, yeah, sure, that roster. What, when you look at everything they have, like, it looks great. But I just don't trust, and it just seems like I've been watching Minnesota draft at the top of the draft for 20 years, it feels like.
I mean, dude, the president died, for God's sake.
Oh, my God. Jesus.
I'm not laughing at that.
Yeah, you are.
I'm laughing at Al falling over.
I'm laughing.
No, we've laughed at that. I mean, you guys were making jokes as Alan Thicke.
We laughed at it. Yeah, we laughed at Alan Thicke like the day he died.
That was so bad.
But it was a really good
joke. But I feel like Alan Thicke would want you to last when he died.
Yeah.
We made it. Somebody made it.
I don't know the Minnesota Timberwolves former president's sense of humor, but.
Flip Saunders would not. Flip Saunders is one of the nicest, kindest people you'll ever meet, like, legitimately. The only person I think who didn't like Flip Saunders was Rasheed Wallace. There's a great story about that, it was the year they lost to LeBron. So it was 2 years removed from them losing to the Heat with Flip. So they'd lost back-to-back years of the conference finals. And Flip, again, I'm not even joking when I tell you that you could not find a person in the league that didn't like him, okay? Like, and I've had these conversations with Chauncey Billups and talks about how much he liked Flip. But Rasheed is a special breed. Like, he really just... Like, Larry Brown and him had a great bond. Like, those two guys, Carolina, like, they just got each other. Like, Rasheed was one of those guys who's so smart that he hated all his coaches because he was smarter than them, except Larry. So, you know, like, so with Flip, nice guy, but they lose again in the conference finals to LeBron this time. And apparently the story goes, the legend goes that in the locker room, and I've gotten this confirmed, so it's not really a legend. It's a real story. that he apparently told he went into the coaches and started ripping into them, like ripping into an assistant and ripping to another assistant. And then he gets to Flip and he goes, "And you're the most non-coaching his mother bleeper I've ever played for. And I played for Mike Dunleavy Sr." So somewhere Mike Dunleavy Sr.'s ears were ringing and going, like, how the hell did I get hit by this shrapnel?
Sheets,
like, what the hell happened here? Yeah. And it was just like, I mean, it's funny, but it's terrible because Flip, first of all, was such a nice man. And obviously he's no longer with us, but it's like, it's funny, man. Like, yeah, that's wild. But anyway,
I thought you were going to say she'd punch him in the face or something. I was ready for
no way. John Crotty tells me great. No. He would never do that. Kind of guy. Listen, I like calling him the most non-coaching his mother bleeper ever. Like, that's pretty
good. Great. It's a great story.
It's fitting.
I just thought it would escalate to Sheed having his hands around his neck or something.
John Crotty told me a story once about when he played on those Portland teams with him, and how Dunleavy wanted Sheed to get in the post. So Crotty would be in the game and Sheed would be flaring out to the 3-point line, and Crotty would be like at the elbow and he'd like point to the post and then like Sheed like shake him off like a catcher. And then he'd just be like, and then he'd look at Dunleavy, and Dunleavy's like pointing to the post, and he'd point to the post again. And she would just shake his head, and he'd be like throwing his hands up, like, what is happening here? And then she would be like, man, just give me the damn ball. And then he'd be like, whatever, fine. And that was kind of it. That was kind of life with Sheed. It was always interesting.
So much. He's so great. I love that he was on that Boston team that went to I just loved watching him. I'm so
glad. Oh, well, listen, when the Heat played them in the Pistons those 2 years, oh, man, it was so great. I'll never forget when they beat the year they beat Miami, when Dwayne got hurt with the rib or whatever, in the Stan year. So I used to have a seat right behind the Heat bench back then. And so he would Damon Jones couldn't defend Chauncey to save his life in that series. Right. And so Rasheed would get the ball at the elbow and they'd post Chauncey up on Damon. And he would have the ball way up above his head and he'd look at Steve Smith. And, you know, he played with Steve Smith in Portland. That's when Smitty came back to Miami that 1 year. And he'd go, hey, Smitty, watch this. And he'd go, all day. And he'd just, like, give it to Chauncey. Chauncey would just eat Damon's lunch. And he'd just, like, he'd jog backwards, just kind of like the Michael Jordan shrugs. He'd be like, I told you. And it was unbelievable. Like, he was the best. Like, so good to cover. Like, oh, it was always so great.
Speaking of players and coaches yapping, when you talked to Riley, what was said off the record about him and Shaq before Shaq was traded and what transpired in that practice when Alonzo had to separate him? Did he speak to that?
You know, he said that he said to me that the stories were embellished. And I said, Pat, I said, you're crazy. Like, what were you doing trying to step with him? And he's just like, those stories get embellished. We had arguments, but you know, he's like, for the most part, it was love. And, you know, and look, you could actually look it up in the story. He talks about, though, how, and I don't remember the exact quote, but he made some sort of comment basically talking about, like, look, man, like, he didn't say this, but he basically inferred that, like, I'm no day at the beach, okay? So I get that. You know, and he did kind of take some of that blame, but he didn't apologize for it. You know, he's like, that's just who I am. And that's just the way it's going to be. And you know what? You give and take. And he basically talks about how he likes confrontation, you know, not to the point where it's every day, but he thinks that's a good dynamic. And look, Eric does a lot of that too, and has always done a lot of that. I mean, he does it with Hassan, I think, still to some extent. And, you know, I that's kind of the discussion that he had about Shaq. It was that. And look, it was mostly very, very referential and, you know, basically talking about how if it wasn't for Shaq and that move, that the franchise would not be considered what it is because it kind of started everything, really, from a championship level perspective. And
do you guys ever think he'll talk about LeBron that way?
In that way, I mean, he's going to be able to speak about it with love at some point, but I don't
it
think
ain't now.
Yeah, it ain't now.
It ain't now. look, and maybe what's his face who works with me, who's Hunter.
What's his face?
I just his Good name plug. Escaped me right now.
I'm gonna add him for this podcast. Send him the audio.
The guy who wrote the Tiger Woods. The guy who wrote the Tiger Woods.
Oh, the one who's doing the Riley piece. That
Maybe he can get him to say something. Now we didn't really talk about LeBron. My whole thing was about Shaq. So look, could Pat get there? Yeah, I don't think Pat hates LeBron. I just think Pat's so competitive that it doesn't allow him to love LeBron right now. I think that's what I would say.
It'll get to a point where like real knows real. You know what I mean? Like
listen, there's no question. Game recognizes game. And I'll tell you this, say what you want, man, about Pat. And I've had arguments with a million people about him. I am a disciple, okay? I'm not saying he doesn't have flaws. I know those flaws, okay? I just told you them that he can push a little too hard. Like I've seen it firsthand, okay? But I am a disciple in the sense that he knows what he's doing. It's rare that he's going to get caught with his pants down like he did with LeBron. And LeBron, I've had this conversation. I know you guys don't like this guy, but Windhorst and I had this conversation and he's right. Like he wrote once that LeBron did to Pat what Pat's done to everyone else. Well, and he's right. LeBron got rid of Pat when he didn't need Pat anymore. And Pat has done that. And he's been right every time.
He just did it to Whether Dwayne.
Dwayne, go back to Zoe. And yeah, like I've told a lot of people, and you know, when the Wade thing happened, we did a podcast, a secret podcast that never got aired.
No,
it got aired.
It got aired one day.
Oh, okay. I was going to say we could have sold it like Wu-Tang.
The lost episodes.
Yeah. But yeah, like I told you that day, I said, listen, this thing is bad. This thing is, I don't know if it's beyond, it's likely beyond repair. And you were crying, Navis.
I cried. Listen, I wrote the sappiest column I've ever written in my life.
Hot take Harry was telling me I was crazy. And I was sitting on the fact that I knew he was probably, at that point when I was talking to you, I was like 75 to 80% sure he was going to Chicago. And I was texting with people at that time. And I think we finished the podcast and 10 minutes later, I got the text of, hey, it's 2 for 47 in Chicago. Because, and I was like, okay. And then I tweeted it out and it was over. And that was it. Like it happened. And I'm telling you, Pat's great at that though. Like, say what you want. And I love Dwayne too. Okay. Like Dwayne is my guy, but Pat's right. He was right on Dwayne and he was right on Zoe and he was right on Timmy and he was right on Shaq. And he's been right on a lot of guys when he's gotten, when he's shown them the door or he's allowed them to leave or traded them or whatever, however you want to describe it.
Look okay? at the guys he said no to this offseason. Dang, Joe Johnson, Dwayne, all bad now.
Yeah. Listen, Dwayne, it pains me to say it, but yeah, like he if I were him, I would opt in to the $23.5 million. Yeah, like but unless he just wants to go after another ring, and then, you know, you can justify that. He could get, look, if he's okay with getting the mid-level at 9 and getting one of those, like, you know, I don't know, like the mid-level for 2 years would probably be, well, I guess, I don't know if you could do 2 years. Man, that would be tough because he's what, 35?
He's not opted out of that deal, man. He is not.
Well, unless somebody gives him like the mid-level for 2 or 3 years, like I could see him doing that and just saying, okay, that's cool on a good team. You know, like maybe
Cleveland.
I'm not saying anything.
That comes up, man.
Right. I'm not saying anything because I don't know. Okay. But, and I'll tell you this, Dwayne and those around him were shocked that this happened and they felt like, you know what? They deserved better. And they did deserve better, ultimately. And I don't mean it monetarily. I just mean it the way Pat went about it. But that's how cold and callous he is, man. Like, do I think it was right that Pat Riley wouldn't even meet with him, call him, text him? Like, I was told at the end, like, yo, they didn't even try, like, to bring me back or bring him back.
Yeah, he said they didn't fight.
But a lot of that stems from when LeBron left. I mean, it's been well documented, but the minute the Dwayne-Pat disconnect happened, the minute that he felt like Dwayne knew LeBron was out the door and he still was flying to Vegas and meeting with him and going through that whole, you know, jumping through those hula hoops for a player that was already gone.
Yes.
The letter was already written and Dwayne knew that. I think it's a little ridiculous to some extent to not look at the whole, like, you know, all the chain of events that took place as to how it got there. You know, it's not like Pat just said, I don't need Dwayne anymore. You're out.
Okay, I agree. There is a chain of events, but I still, at the end of the day, I still don't think Pat handled it right. And I'll tell you this, Pat will tell you in a private moment he didn't handle it right.
I think Pat's kind of already said that. I mean, he's alluded to that.
Yeah, but I think at the time...
But one thing is if he tells the media, another thing is if he's saying it for real. Like, I think, look, there are a lot... Like, I've covered Pat Riley a long time. Sometimes there are times he says things...
He says a lot of bleep.
Like, forget about what he says. Listen to what his actions are or watch what his actions are. I think when he said that, I think he was saying that because Dwayne was coming back and it's the right thing to say. And I'm not saying that he didn't feel that way 100%, but I'm just telling you that it's one of those things where I think that as time has gone by, like, he probably feels it more is what I would say.
Listen, Pat saw those videos of those guys on a boat in the Mediterranean while he's trying to sit there and talk to Kevin Durant into coming to Miami, and he was having none of that.
Dwayne thought he should be the priority in front of Hassan as well, though. I mean, he thought he should be priority number one.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a tough spot.
George, you think that they get in the room? Speaking of Durant, do you think they get in the room with any free agent they want coming up? Because they're far removed from winning a championship. So I'm kind of wondering.
Well, who are we talking about? I mean, like, I don't think Steph Curry's.
No, yeah, I mean, like, I don't think he's.
There's two guys:
Gordon Hayward and Blake Griffin.
I think
they could get a meeting with Gordon Hayward and Blake Griffin. I think it's possible. Sure, I don't see why not. Like, I don't think they're the Knicks, right? Like, where they're not going to get a meeting with people.
Did Dwayne cancel on the Knicks? Weren't they have a meeting and he canceled on them?
Yeah, I don't think. Well, he never met with them personally. I know that.
Didn't they want
maybe,
to? Though?
Maybe in 2010 he did.
Well, when they signed Courtney Lee, like, it was done. Like, he couldn't go.
They didn't have any money.
Like, they didn't have any space for him. Yeah, and look, I mean, the Knicks, it's funny. I had a long conversation today since the Knicks are in town with Frank Isola. And man, I could tell you all sorts of great stories from the Knicks beat writers today. Like I met with a bunch of them.
Do it. Do it.
Over the 30 minutes. Let's go.
Give
me something. Give me something.
They've got stories. I mean, the Phil stuff has reached the boiling point to the point where it's like even people in the building are starting to be like, dude, what did we do here with him? You know, like it's that kind of thing.
He's a crazy old man.
Yeah, man. It's not pretty. And here's the thing. He's when you've had this type of success he's had, and I remember having this conversation with Phil. I was filling in on Mike and Mike one morning, the morning after he was hired. And I was doing the show with Golic, and I asked him plain and simple, like, what makes you think you can do this job just because you were good at the other job? And he gave me some long BS answer of like, he'd been around Red Holtzman, who was one of the greatest coach general managers of all time with the Knicks. And I think he had made some sort of flailing comment about Jerry West, who, by the way, he didn't even get along with all that well. And it was like, basically what he was trying to tell me is through osmosis, right? Like he picked this up, well, like being around these people.
That's sports analysis.
Yeah. And it was like, okay. But he was not happy that I asked that question.
Go ahead. Sorry. I didn't mean
it. Yeah. But that's just it. Like he went into it with, hey, I'm Phil Jackson. I can make this work. And he's kind of still has a little bit of this rivalry with Pat. And he feels like, if Riley can do it, I can do it. Like, how hard could it be? Without realizing how many years it took Riley of failure to get to the point where he got. You know, like, and he's 70, right?
Is he embarrassed, like, George?
Is he what?
Is he embarrassed? Because this has been embarrassing. Like, what's happened with him has been embarrassing. And is he self-aware enough to know that it's been embarrassing?
I would think so. I don't know. I didn't ask that question, but I'll ask tonight when I go to the game. I'll ask a bunch of the beat writers and just kind of see what kind of answer I get to that question. And maybe next time I come on the podcast.
It's great to see Isola always comparing him to Riley. And he's had like multiple tweets where he's like talking about what Riley's doing compared to what Phil's doing. And I'm sure Phil gets really upset at that because, you know, that.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. I mean, well, Frank just has ultimate respect for Pat. Frank was a young beat writer when Pat was there. So like, I just think he just holds him in such high regard, that it's just that, and clearly Pat's done a really bleeping good job, right? Like, even though he had many, many failures. The first, I don't know.
Better than the Sixers.
According to Coachy.
According to who?
Coachy.
Coachy. Your boy Coachy.
Coachy Ramos.
Yeah.
Coachy Ramos. Yeah, listen, I think Pat's done a good job. I've always said to him, there's multiple ways to skin a cat, right? And just because he does it one way doesn't mean it's not successful. I think clearly you can't sit here and not say he's not been successful. Like, that's crazy talk. You could prefer another method. That's different. But,
George,
like,
he's no Hinkie. He's no Hinkie.
But, you know, but honestly, you know what? Would you guys talk? Were you talking about Isola was a young man when Riley was with the Knicks, and like when you think about it now, and it goes back to what I was saying before. Does Riley hold the same cachet with younger players that he did? Like with the Wades and the LeBrons, like that generation is. I mean, we're watching these guys kind of fade away a little bit. I mean, we probably got three or four more years of those guys, but. The younger generation, do they know who Pat Riley is? Like, do they care who Pat Riley is?
Yeah, but I think that you know who Pat Riley is.
But do you care?
I think you care a little bit. Look, the Lakers rode Jerry West for a really long time, man. Okay? And Jerry West, and the Warriors then hired him as a consultant, right? Like, he's the reason they didn't trade Clay for Kevin Love. So, yeah, I do think that you hold some weight. Is it going to have the same – is it going to resonate the exact same way? No.
I mean, the ring's on the table. I don't know if they're working this time around.
Well, but look, they're only a couple of years removed from that, right? Like, I still think that he's got – that bought him – those LeBron years bought him some more years.
I also think that, when you look at – the legend of Pat Riley may be more attractive to today's player than Pat Riley as a person because of the age difference or whatever you want to put
there. Correct.
But when you've got – when you've got Spo, who's a little younger, and now you've got Shane, who's with the organization, yes, who's well respected. I think that you're making the right moves to surround him with guys that can connect with today's players.
Yeah, 100%. And look, the reality is this, man. And, you know, nobody's necessarily talking about this, but whenever Pat does call it quits, my guess is that Eric becomes the Popovich here. Yeah. And Eric will coach it for as long as he wants. And, you know, Eric will eventually do what Pat did and go upstairs, you know, and the circle of life will continue, you know.
And then Dan Craig kind of becomes the head coach.
Right. Or Juwan, you know what I mean? Or whatever.
Or
you know
Quinny. What I mean? Like, Quinny.
No, not Quinny. I would say that
Juwan. Oh, and he did it Quinny.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh, my. George.
I don't think Quinny's head coach material just yet.
We were going to – the day that Shaq got his jersey retired – us being the counterculture that we are, we wanted to have Chris Quinn Day, release like a Chris Quinn graphic every hour, Chris Quinn stories. I was flying, so I couldn't do it. That would have been awesome. I'm so disappointed we didn't do that.
So petty. Shaq was great that day. I don't know. You guys like are you?
I love
Shaq.
I wrote a great pro Shaq column. I was just flying, so I couldn't watch the game. I was sad.
Mm. Shaq was great.
Before we let you go. Harrison, hot take Harry, wanted us to ask you how many Heat
games. That's the guy with the Sesame Street
yes,
avatar.
That's the guy that scorches Earth.
And now does he look like Big Bird or Ernie or Bert or Grover? Which one does he actually look like?
Which is the one that lives in a trash can?
Oscar the Grouch?
That guy. He looks like him. And he is awesome.
He dresses like him.
Yeah. He has he dresses
same like eyebrows.
Oh wow, that's not a good look.
How did this become Harry slander?
Listen, we always want a Harry slander.
So ask the question.
Harrison wanted to know how many Heat games have you actually watched this season?
Dude, I watched them all. Like, I don't know if you realize this. I live in an area where I can watch games at 4:30 in the afternoon.
George,
like, it's pretty easy to watch East Coast basketball.
George, you're great at radio. You are one of the best young talents around. You know you.
I'm
have
not young
to say.
Anymore, right?
You know
so let's stop there. The answer is none. Yes,
I haven't watched any, and then we end the show.